Those mailboxes can you hit? Say, out of 10 throws?
10? Well, around 6 or 7.
I'll hit 10.
Bull crap.
10.
You mean 10 shots at the same box? That's what you mean, Michael?
No, I'll start with the nearest.
Red flag on it?
Yeah, the Powell family.
10 stones to hit the next 10 along. Up to the one nearly falling over?
The young man looked and nodded.
Burke, sure, that one.
You can read the lettering that far off? You got eyes like a hunting hawk. Dad, you hear that?
Ryan was chest deep in the engine compartment of the wag, trying to fix a wrench on a recalcitrant and unreachable bolt. He didn't answer his son.
Dad, you hear me?
Sure, sure. Just keep quiet and stay out of everyone's hair, will you, Dean?
Come on, Dean. I say I'll hit all 10 with 10 stones. What do you say?
I say you're a liar.
Suppose I do it.
Suppose the cow jumps right over the moon, huh?
Suppose I do it, Dean. What then?
Oh, like a bet? You mean like I kiss your ass or something?
Michael narrowed his eyes in surprise.
Why would I want that? No, if I do what I say, you can just say you're sorry for not believing me.
That all?
Of course. Back in Nilvanity, where I was raised from a little baby, that was how we would all play this game.
Sure. Go on then, get your stones.
Michael wandered into the street, walking slowly, occasionally peering down at the assortment of rocks and pebbles. Twice he picked one up with his toes, balancing easily on the other bare foot. The rest he collected into the pocket of his brown robe.
I'm ready.
Go!
Dean blinked. He hadn't seen Michael's arm move at all, but he heard the rounded pebble strike the center of the Powell family mailbox and saw it leave a silver dent.
One?
Yeah, one.
Four.
Right.
Doc had laid down his tattered book and was staring down into the street. Mildred was watching what was going on with an intent fascination. Christy had opened one eye. Ryan and JB were still buried under the hood of the malfunctioning wag.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Jesus Christ!
Not quite, Dean. Not quite.
Doc stood. So did Christy.
2 to go. The one without a name on it, and then Burke. Ready?
Dean nodded.
Oh, I don't believe this.
What's going on?
Michael just threw stones at 8 mailboxes in a row and hit all 8, Ryan. Now he's going for 10 out of 10.
Ryan glanced down the suburban street. The farthest of the boxes was at least 200 feet away, partly in shadow. It would have been a fair shot with a handgun. With a stone, it would be exceptional.
10 out of 10?
Watch him, Dad, watch him!
9.
Michael's wrist snapped forward, the stone hissing in a low, flat trajectory. The box was knocked clean off its post by the force of the stone striking it.
Want to bet he gets a 10th one as well, Ryan?
I was going to ask you the same question. Wouldn't lose Jack against his doing it.
The young man turned to look at the watching faces. For the first time since he'd been trawled, Michael seemed happy. There was a smile haunting his lips. He tossed the last rounded pebble into the air and caught it again.
10 for the 10 bright shiners.
The stone flew, a tiny dot in the shadows beneath the overhanging trees.
10!
That's good.
Best I've seen. Kid could knock the balls off a diving hornet.
Marksmanship that would have brought the green tint of jealousy to the very eyes of William Tell himself.
Ryan turned back toward the engine.
Get this going and we'll be off to the redoubt. Make a jump someplace else.
Doc had his thumb marking a page in the book of poems. He peered down into it.
Someplace else. As the man says here, should we not consider ourselves to be a morning too many and apart by a 1,000 miles?
Ryan didn't understand what Doc was saying. Not then. It took 3 full hours to get the engine of the wag to start again and run for more than 30 seconds. Christy had been sleeping most of the time, and Mildred had eventually joined her, after making sure that her little trove of medicine was tucked safely into her pockets. Dean had been running up and down the street, firing stones from the hip at the windows of the houses, yelling delightedly at the occasional crashing sound of broken glass. Ryan eventually stopped him from the pointless destruction. Doc and Michael had been talking on the porch of the nearest house. As the APC's exhaust finally belched bluish smoke, Ryan stood by the rear doors and shepherded everyone inside the wag.
Come on, brothers and sisters. All aboard.
The night train. Hey, where've Doc and Michael gone? They must have heard you shout.
Yeah.
Ryan looked around.
They must have heard the engine. Me shouting. Must have.
Ryan went with Christy and Dean and searched carefully along the northern side of the street, blasters drawn and cocked. Having spent all that time and energy in getting the wag to run, the armorer slipped into the driver's seat and switched off the ignition.
Doc! Michael! Doc!
Then JB walked with Mildred on the south side, going through all the houses, calling out for their missing friends. Their voices rang through the silence, but there was no reply. Because the whole region was a maze of crisscrossing paths, porches, and streets, there was no hope of tracking them down. Ryan quickly discovered that the two had simply walked through the nearest house and out the back door, across the garden, and past a rotted gate into a rear alley. Then they headed into the vast, wandering, silent suburbs of Chicago.
We could chase them, Dad. Can't have gone too far.
Nobody's seen them for sure for at least an hour and a half. Could be 2 hours. Might be anywhere within a radius of 7 or 8 miles from here. No. It looks like they planned all this, in one of their own free will.
Where to? Why'd they run away and leave us?
Ryan shook his head.
I've felt something up with Doc for a while, since we trawled Michael. Thing is, with that old son of a bitch, you never quite know for certain what's going on inside that scrambled head of his. But I'm sure he had some plan. I just don't know what.
Hey, look at this.
What is it, Christy?
The book Doc had been reading, by some guy named Bob Dylan. And look, sweetheart, turned over the corner of a page here.
What?
Doc's folded a page over where he was reading. Must have been just before he and Michael went off hiking.
JB had just reappeared with Mildred after their fruitless search along the other side of the street.
Not a sign.
No. They went out back of this house here, vanished into the path behind it. You can't pick up any tracks. It's hopeless.
Where on earth do they think they're going?
After Abe?
JB shook his head, answering himself.
Why would they do that? No, it doesn't make any sense.
Christy found the book Doc was reading before he went.
What is it? Bob Dylan? Ugh!
What, Mildred?
The guy sounded like buckwheat on helium.
JB turned to Christy.
Any clue on that page he marked?
Christy looked up, her face solemn.
Think so. He's underlined one bit of one poem near the front of the book.
What's it say?
It's a line about trying to find old friends, if they're still around.
Old friends.
Fireblast, old friends. He and Michael are going to the redoubt. The Cron Jump unit. They're both trying to get home.
One shouldn't lose touch with old friends. The skillful Mr. Dylan is quite correct, you know, my dear Michael. Keep in touch while they're all still around.
Doc and Michael had hidden, at the old man's suggestion, less than a quarter mile away from where JB and Ryan were laboring to repair the wag.
Once they find us missing, they'll search. But they will swiftly give up. Can't track on bare stone. I've learned that, Michael.
Should we not have run away as far and fast as possible?
No. I do not know how long it will be before we are missed. But they can move faster than we. We might get caught in the open, and then we should never be able to follow through with our plan.
Your plan?
Indeed.
They'd been in the front bedroom of a trim duplex, 3 streets from the rest of the group, sitting quietly on the faded linoleum floor beneath a broken window, waiting and listening. The agony of seeing himself with his wife and children on the dark, flickering vid film had been one of the most difficult and painful experiences of Doc Tanner's life. The disturbance of being trawled, years ago now, had left him permanently damaged. There were times that his mind was relatively balanced and normal, and times that it became deeply disturbed. Few people knew better than Doc what an erratic and unreliable procedure the time trawling had been. He had gradually become reconciled to the fact that he would never again be able to see Emily or the little ones. Never. Then they had come across this unbelievable jewel in the heart of the abandoned redoubt. A Cron unit fully functioning and ready to go. All he had to do was to get back there, have a few hours of secure privacy to check everything out and make the necessary computations. Then, if the gods smiled upon him, he could hazard the jump, back to November 1896. It was like a dream. A dream that he'd lived with ever since he was lifted and jerked into the horrors of the present. A dream that could now, just possibly, become a reality. The arrival of